Having a fisheries background is very, very important to bass fishing business. Ken Cook, O.T. Fears are a couple of names, but Michael Murphy went to Purdue University. And Michael, you've used your fisheries background to help you as a professional angler.
I have, and it's been a real good thing for me too, because when you're competing against these guys that have been out here 20 years, you got to figure out a way to catch up, and as far as knowledge, to at least.
Well, you know, you went to Purdue, which I won't hold against you. That's a good Big Ten school, but, you know, us Illini people, we have to kind of talk about that a little bit. But the Big Ten has done a great job in two facets. Number one is you got a great ag program, of course, over there where the fisheries biology department's at. But you've also got a great bunch of fishermen that fish for each of these universities now.
Yeah, and that's been one of the things that helped me get to where I'm at today. And it's more or less a feeder system now. You're seeing the college crowd come up and is growing along with the CBAA, and I've helped out with them. It's really neat how far this thing has gone in such a short time.
Well, let's kind of go down a road here. You know, usually college kids are going to do things that are cool. You know, they're going to do things that they think, whether it's skateboarding or X Games type stuff or whatever it may be, but they're going to do things that are cool. Is fishing becoming cool at the college level, do you think?
You know, when I was first in it, I didn't think so, but now, I mean, when I look back, the press that you got when, you know, like the school newspaper, and then you're sitting in class and people come up and you're like, oh, you're Michael Murphy. And that kind of adds a little bit of the cool factor. You feel like one of those quarterback of the football team, you know, even on a different level.
Well, you know, it is, and it is a different level, but you're starting to see, as you mentioned, these, you know, these college trails and, the, you know, the Big Ten tournament. And by the way, Illinois won that. And and then you have these other things that are going on. But, you know, you're starting to see, as you mentioned, that feeder system for the college-aged young man and young lady. And it's starting to be, you know, where it's being acceptable. And people are saying, hey, we got counselors that have been doing this for 10 years now and all those kind of things. And it really becomes part of the educational process.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, when I went to college, I you know, this whole fishing thing, I could probably look back and honestly say, it was more or less by accident. You know, did I sit there and say, hey, I want to do that? Yeah. Did I realistically think it was going to happen? I didn't know, but I took the precautions and the steps to at least have the opportunity. You know, I went to school for engineering, and I had scholarship money, you know, there waiting for me, and I did that for a semester, and I asked myself, what am I getting into? You know, I'd rather take a pay cut and do something fun. And I got into the fisheries program there, meeting some people through the fishing team, and I just instantly loved it. And I loved it to the point, you know, that I was learning so much, volunteering for extracurricular stuff, did a crayfish study, landed a job for a utilities company up there in Indiana, and docked over 1,000 hours of electrofishing. So when you do all that stuff, and you get the reputation of being a go-getter, the professors always come to you and just, you know, give you more and more, because they're on a budget. They want volunteers. But the same sense, too, I looked at it as not getting paid then. You know, I'm getting paid for it today. That motivated me to go above and beyond, and I think that's really helped out.
Well, I was thinking maybe one of those electroshock boats would help me in my fishing tournaments. You think that would help? Just take that out there, and you just have to net them then. You don't really have to catch them. That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that really helped me with my fishing, because I could use that. But, you know, Michael, I guess one thing that also lended to is you've been involved actively for a long time, as long as I've known you, in lure design. And I think sometimes that maybe is confused a little bit. I think when somebody thinks about lure design, they may think, well, that really is, hey, I want to build this, build it for me. But in reality, you guys actually do a lot more with that, and you're actively involved in that in a couple of fronts.
Yeah, I am. And, you know, out of college, you know, with having experience with fisheries, and a matter of fact, I got a little bit of sales background in college also. Once I ran into Denny Brower, he came there to film Denny's bass class, and I really got to become pretty good friends with him. And I asked him one day, I said, you and Chad, you know, what should I do to take this next level? And he said, what kind of speaking skills do you have? I said, no, I don't know. I probably could use more. He goes, you need more speaking classes. I took that so much to heart that I literally picked up a whole second major of selling and sales management. I never did finish it, but I was taking 24 credit hours a semester. But because of those two things, that landed me a job working for Spro. And that was a pretty good 2 years of my life there. And with that, you know, I was kind of the man behind the scenes, working with the Frog and working with Tim Norman and Dean Rojas and Bill Siementhal. And what I did was take their ideas. I mean, these guys are just phenomenal in what they do, Dean Rojas and Bill Siementhal, and they would relay all this stuff that they want out of a bait. And my job is, like, I guess, in a sense, to be a problem solver and take what they have with their drawings and to make it, you know, doable based on the technology that's available and what literally the process is. So I was that guy in a sense that was up to like 2 a.m. talking to overseas factories and kind of the wheel behind the mad machine or the offensive line of the, you know, the NFL Super Bowl winning team, you know. That was just kind of what I did, kind of like, I don't know if I was an unsung hero or what, but I tell you, you know, it really was more or less a huge learning experience for those 2 years while I was at Spro.
Well, I've got this bad visual picture of the drawings that Bill Siementhal would send you. For some reason, there's just this, were they in crayon or, well, how did that work? You know, Rojas might be able to draw, but I'm not sure about Bill.
Bill's a mad scientist. I tell you what, for somebody, you know, coming from a fishing background, Bill is somebody that's absolutely amazed me with his general understanding without the actual going to the class for it. The stuff that he can think of just by his own, you know, cognitive thinking of being out there is just unreal. The things that he's taught me that's overflowed today, and, you know, that's been another opportunity that's just chain reacted from my fisheries experience and landed that job was learning from the best of what they do. I mean, Bill being a clear water deep fisherman that just can find fish, and then you got Rojas that just, if there's a shallow water fish anywhere swimming, breathing, you'll find it. And that's, you know, when you get those two guys and since teaching, I don't think they ever realized I'd end up on this side of the fence. I don't know if they liked me anymore. I don't know.
quickly, we got, you know, a couple things I want to go over. Number one, IMA Japan, you're building a lure for them.
Yes, that's correct. You know, after Spro, I went to work for Shakespeare, and, you know, and during that downtime, I really missed working tinkering with the lures. And when I told, you know, Shakespeare, they gave me a home for a year and, you know, kind of to figure out what I wanted to do while I was fishing the FLW series. And everything just really took off with FLW. Everything just kind of, you know, happened on its own. So I decided I was going to fish full time. Well, a friend of mine in the industry, you know, I'm not saying there's a lot of old people, but there's not a whole lot of young people. Matt Pano, he's one of the younger guys in the industry that I really connected with when I was on the road and working and stuff. And we just became really good friends, and we always kept in touch, and we were just talking one day about how I was going to be fishing full time and starting to fish FLW and all the opportunities that were, you know, happening with me. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. I got something that's coming up. I'll pitch and see what happens with it. And then he came back to me and said, I got an idea. Why wouldn't you like to go back to doing some lure designs for us? And I was pretty excited to be able to fish and then go back and doing the thing that I really like to do at Spro. And, you know, I guess that engineering, that one semester engineering at Purdue.
Paid dividends, and now you got a jerkbait that you come out with.
That is correct. That jerkbait is based on a concept. You know, I spent long, long hours either late at night or early in the morning at Purdue's aquaculture facility studying, you know, lake herring and studying food diet research and how these fish just move. And you watch how they move. They watch how they swim. And, you know, when you shock them up, when you toy with them, just flat being with them, I had this idea of why, even back then, with jerkbaits, why people... And I learned some of this from Bill, why people don't make baits to pick up the cadence of the bait. That may sound a little confusing right now, but let me touch base on this. A lot of your designers either design baits that were, back then, the technology wasn't able to do specified shapes, or they're designing them based on what their forage is. In China and Japan, it's a smelt. Well, that the smelt is like an oval in shape if you took a cross-section. With that new IMA, it's called the Flit 120, if you took a cross-section of it, it's triangular. And the reason that is based off of the gizzard and thread fin that we have in our waters that are part of the herring family that are also triangular in shape. So the idea is, if you create something that has the cadence and shape of what you're trying to imitate, it'll more easily pick up the movement of that forage. So when you do that, you don't have to create the bill to achieve the action. The only thing we created the bill for is achieve the depth. So when you have that, you have a real stress-free jerkbait. It doesn't wear you out. And with that, the action, I mean, it's so realistic. You know, matched with the sound. We went through like 30 prototypes to make sure this thing was right. And IMA's really a top-notch company. They're one of the top, I think they're number two to Lucky Craft, but they're like a top saltwater hard lure manufacturer in Japan. So they're like right there neck and neck with Lucky Craft over there. And, you know, Lucky Craft is, you know, has always made real good product, and IMA coming, you know, they're taking a little bit of a different angle with the pros and with you know, our designs, and you know, they have a lot of good technology too. So it's going to be really interesting where IMA, they fit in the market. I think you're really going to see them take off.
Well, no doubt about it. Now, the final thing that's most important to me, and I know my engineer Aaron feels the same way, is that we know you're a Slim Jim guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're the Slim Jim angler. And you know, we kind of like Slim Jims here. And you know, we know that maybe you have connections to be able to get us a couple. And we want the big ones. We don't want those little bitty Slim Jims, you know, the kind that are about like a pencil. We want those giant Magnum Slim Jims. Is that a possibility?
Oh, that's definitely a possibility. We've got Tabasco and regular. Which one do you want?
Well, I don't know. Tabasco's hard on an old guy, so I'm thinking probably regular, you know, and I've got to kind of wean myself, you know, and I can only have maybe a couple of them a week, so, you know, but I like those things. They're good. They're good for you, and you know, they're one of those things that really keep you vitalized. I know that's what you get them for.
Yeah, that's, you know, I tell you what, that's been a really good sponsor for me this year. You know, when you're out there on the water, I'm bad about it myself, but definitely drink a lot of water, but it's not like you're going to get up early in the morning and make a sandwich. Having a Slim Jim there is pretty easy, and, you know, quick, good snack and high protein keeps you going.
Well, we turned this into a Slim Jim commercial, no question about it. But, Michael, I appreciate you being with us. You know, keep me informed about what's going on at IMA. I think it's very important that they continue to do what they're doing. It's great for the competitive angler in particular, because you're going to have baits that are going to be superior, you know, out there, and, sure, and people are always looking for that. So thanks for being with us here at Bass Fan Radio.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity, and don't forget to check out the Taboo site as well. That's been a really big thing up and coming.
Well, we'll have you back. We're going to talk about that whole Taboo thing. I think I'll get you and Lefebvre on together, and we'll talk about Taboo. You know, I think that's something a lot of people would be interested in. We'll do that here in the near future.
All right. We'll talk about another one of those mad scientist projects that I've been involved with. So anyway, I appreciate you very much. Thank you.
Well, the Michael Murphy mad scientist, we had him here on Bass Fan Radio. I'm Terry Brown, and this has been Bass Fan Radio.